You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. I do like a penultimate chapter. It is the only time in my life that I have the opportunity to use the word penultimate, and as you will know by now, if you have listened to many of these, it is one of my favourite words. This is the penultimate chapter of The Frost Fair Affair. So come back next week for the very final chapter of this. Let's face it, it is going to be an ongoing series. If you have not read or listened to Tea and Sympathetic Magic, the first Neem story, you can do that here on the podcast. You can get hold of the book via my Patreon, and both of these will actually be released for general purchase as ebooks and in paperback later in the year, just slightly in time for Christmas. But for now, The Frost Fair Affair, Chapter 12, Two Conversations in Wistwaria Palace. The Queen of the Teacup Isles was exceptionally pretty, and not only because she wore tiaras and lived in a palace. She had a round face, light brown skin, the sweetest smile in the world, and spiralling black curls of hair that were always pinned up in some clever way. Today, it was a series of bronze hair clips, displaying frogs and dragonflies. The Queen of the Teacup Isles did not bother with fashion, as it bothered her enough for both of them. There was not a single snowflake anywhere on her attire. She was 23 years old, the same age as Neem. She had been queen for 6 years. Queen Ord did not order tea, but a proper luncheon spread, including glasses of ratafia, small chicken pies, and an excellent salad of beets. Neem would have rather liked to eat some of it, but she was too busy retelling her story, which had lacked sufficient detail the first time around, to grab more than a dainty mouthful or two in between the Queen's questions. "My favourite part," said the Queen with a happy sigh, "is where the Duke of Storm and your Mr. Thornberry came rushing in to save you all, and found you had not only caught the infamous Silver Spoon Strangler for them, but had tied her up with the curtain cords. What an adventurous life you lead, Miss Seaborn." "Not usually," said Neem. "I'm a dull sort of thing mostly. Bookworm and wallflower, rolled into one." "So you say," the Queen said, not believing a word of it. She shook her head amiably. "I never liked that, Mrs. Threnod. When the Countess of Balmody used to come to tea with my mother, she always brought that frightful old witch with her. Once she caught me adding a second sugar cube to my tea, and she rapped me across the knuckles with a spoon." "I know what you mean," said Neem. "Still, there are so many horrible old ladies among the gentry. How were we to know one was genuinely an assassin?" "And a filthy traitor, too," the Queen added, her tone quite grim. "Murdering my agents with one hand and publishing vicious cartoons about me with the other. All because that hideous Duke of Glass is convinced that if I die without an heir, the Court of Lords will finally let him be king. Cousins are dreadful, Miss Seaborn. I recommend you never have any." "Oh, that reminds me." She leapt up from the table with a great deal of bounce and ran to the sideboard, where a large brown paper parcel was waiting, tied up with string. "Is that for me?" Neem asked, wondering what on earth the Queen might have chosen as a gift for her. "It's your pamphlets, silly. I'm returning them to you, though you might want to reprint them. I picked out a couple of spelling errors on the one I read, and, well, after that I went simply wild with the red pen, but I enjoyed it very much." She smiled that beautiful smile of hers, all warmth and joy, the smile that had held their kingdom together against all enemies. "You have my pamphlets," Neem repeated, not sure she was hearing right. Of course, I take great interest in matters that affect public opinion. And once I learned that public opinion was shifting in the matter of portal travel for women, I was all for it. Why do you think they picked that cartoon in particular? To ridicule the idea that the queen of their country might be in favour of equality between the sexes. Neem was still stuck on the part where the queen of the Teacup Isles had been in possession of her pamphlets all this time. Did you seize them from Mrs. Threnod? Oh no, said the queen, in all innocence. I stole them in the first place, I'm afraid. Savini tipped me off about them, and I sent my maid Baines to snaffle them from the printers. They're all there, except for a handful we leaked deliberately to the secret senate. I knew those old biddies had been dragging their feet on portal travel, and there were rumours they wanted to squash your campaign. I wanted to shake them up a bit. Also, I wanted to read the thing, to find out whose side you were on. Whose side? You know, the queen said, her dark eyes holding Neem intensely. To find out if you're one of those dreadful ladies who thinks only married women are deserving of white rights and privileges. I'm not married. And while I might be finally convinced to hitch myself to some foreign prince or dashing naval captain, if it means I never have to step into a swan-shaped boat again, well, I shouldn't have to make that choice, should I? So what do you think now? Neem asked. Are we on the same side? The queen's face broke out into pure joy again. The smile that launched 1,000 portals. I rather think we are, Miss Seaborn. As it turned out, it really did just take one conversation with the queen to change the world. Neem couldn't wait to tell Juno, though of course the Duchess of Storm would never admit she had been wrong about something. She'd probably find some way to turn it all into an I told you so. And of course, Juno wasn't entirely wrong. The queen was absolutely led by public opinion as much as her own convenience. Still, they had won. Neem needed to talk to Mr. Thornbury. They hadn't had much of a chance in all the chaos after she took out Mrs. Threnod with a teapot to the face. Henry was little help in the aftermath. He just kept laughing about the whole affair. Even when an alchemist had to be called to provide the antidote for whatever strange sleeping potion Mrs. Threnod had used to dose the other ladies. Neem rather thought Mr. Thornbury had tried to draw her aside at one point, but Henry was hanging off him, and so they barely managed to exchange a word or two before she was summoned away to wait upon the Queen. She was so caught up in her thoughts now that she found herself wandering in quite the wrong part of the palace. Just as she was about to give up and pull one of the bell ribbons to ask for help, an unassuming man in black popped out of a library at her. "Can I help you, miss?" Neem faltered. "Does Mr. Thornbury have an office around here, do you know? If he worked for the Crown, even secretly, surely he had at least a cubby or something where he could sit with a cup of tea and bounce hexes off the ceiling while pondering whatever grand kingdom-threatening secrets he had gathered." The man stared at her and disappeared back into the library. A moment later, a grey-haired man, who must be a senior librarian, emerged in his place. This one had the confidence of an ageing under-butler, though his clothes were faded and dusty. "Let me show you the way, miss," he said, and set off down another corridor. A palace was as bad as a city for getting lost in. At least the ground underfoot was heated stone and not frozen river water. The under-butler, or over-librarian, led her to a large room filled with desks, papers, and empty cups. "Is no one allowed to dust in here?" Neem asked in surprise. "No, miss. All very top-secret stuff in here." The man leaned against a desk. "Thornbury, was it, you said you wanted? He's not in here much." "Well, he's a very busy man." Her eyes narrowed. You needn't keep up the pretense. I know who you are. Do you indeed, miss? His stance changed slightly. He went from an illusion of unimportance to commanding a room. You have a very distinctive nose, she said wistfully, and a way of blending in when you don't want to be noticed. It seems impossible to believe that changing your son's name was enough to ensure no one knew the connection. Mr. Swift, she added, politely. Octavian Swift, the Queen's consultant. Well, whatever his dull job description actually was, hardly mattered. He was the Queen's spymaster. He nodded his head now with equal politeness. Miss Seaborn, I'm told you're very quick at putting things together. Did he tell you that with an air of exasperation? Mr. Swift's mouth twisted a little. Another very familiar expression on this calm older gentleman's face. He may have done. Congratulations on closing the case of the Silver Spoon Strangler. It's a matter of great personal embarrassment that I don't already have you on my payroll. That's very sweet, said Neame, but my mother despairs of my life choices. If I should go so far as to earn a salary, she might die of the vapours. It wasn't an offer. And yet, here I am, turning it down. She had the sensation of being under close observation, which was bad enough at balls when it was done by dowagers. Alone in a room in a palace with the father of a man she had rather hoped to marry at some point. It was entirely unpleasant. May I ask you a question, Mr. Swift? The spymaster gave her the politest of nods. Apparently my agent saw fit to tell you a great deal about our work. Therefore, I am an open book. That wasn't in the least true, and she could see that he no more believed it than she did. How did you feel when your son told you he was stepping away from this business of yours? Octavian Swift blinked. I did not believe he intended to follow through with that particular plan. I still don't. There it was, the reason that Neame felt like she was the enemy, for all his politeness. Is that why he keeps finding himself in the midst of vital missions, despite his retirement? Retirement, the spymaster scoffed. It's all very well for wealthy fribbles like your Duke Henry to play at spycraft for a year or two, and then give it up for wives and babies. But for men like me, men like Charles, the work is never done. Charles. She had never called Thornbury by his first name. She got the impression he didn't like it, or didn't connect it with himself. Perhaps, as a wife, she might use it in private. Perhaps not. Her mamma would call her papa Mr. Seaborn until the day she died, and Neame knew other wives who happily used their husband's last name, or a nickname. What if he wants something else? She tried. Mr. Swift gave her an impatient look. Have you met him? The man is only alive when he's hunting the answer to a question. That was true, she must concede. Take this matter, Swift went on. We never assigned Agent Thornbury to investigate the Silver Spoon Strangler, or to dig into the machinations of the Duke of Glass. He found the threads on his own, brought them to us, after his so-called retirement. When he and Storm got the lead about Fenchurch, they didn't pass it to another operative. They ran off themselves, rescued the damned printer, brought him home to his wife and kids. Now the villainous Duke of Glass has had his treason plot uncovered, and he's disappeared somewhere on the continent, drat his eyes. I need to send someone to find him. Who should I send? Neame's heart sank. You should send your best, she said. Indeed I should. How do you see this ending? She asked after a moment's thought. You give your son the most dangerous of missions, or he takes them himself, over and over. Is there any resolution where he does not die in action? Octavian Swift gave her a canny look. Some day, when he's battered and cynical enough to do it, he'll retire to my desk. He'll make the hard decisions about who goes out into the field, and he'll be brilliant at it. If he lives long enough to get there, muttered Neem. Oh, yes, said the father of the man she loved. If he doesn't, well, he wasn't the man for the job. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my newsletter, my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge, including the entire ebook of this very book that I have been reading to you. See you next week when we return for the very final chapter of The Frost Fair Affair.